is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Live off the record with Shivago Lang is sponsored by the Cleveland Clinic, Fidelity Bank Bahamas, the Jeff Rogers Basketball Camp, the Pan-American Health Organization, RF Bank and Trust, Raw Star Assurance, and Scotia Bank.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. I trust and hope that you are doing well. If you want to give us a call on the show today, the numbers are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316 or 325-4259. That's 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. So you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. We are, of course, live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow Channel 612. That's BTC Flow Channel 612. So I have a couple of issues to discuss with you today, and hopefully we can get through both of those issues properly. I do want to remind you that there's a census that the Bahamas National Statistical Institute is conducting a census. Census being an effort to count every human being in the country and get a host of information that we only get every 10 years that allows for us to make good policies, to plan properly for development and a host of things. And yet, and folk, we need you to cooperate with the census numerators. We need you to give them the information they require. It's the law. Also, though, it's important. It's useful. It's helpful. So we need you, if they come knocking at your door, they have the proper identification and clad in the proper attire to be able to get this information from you. It's a questionnaire that you have to fill out with them. And we want you to do that, man. Come on, man. Parents. Guardians, come on, folks, business people, come on, let's get this done. Let's get this done, man. Please, let's get this done. Those people should not have to strain at this. This isn't going to take anything from your life. This isn't going to give anybody any secret of yours. This is important information for national development, growth, and these things that we're reliant on to live a life of prosperity and peace in the country. So please, please, wherever you are, in New Providence, in Grand Bahama, in Abaco, in Eleuthera, Long Island, Exuma, in Andros, in Cat Island or Crooked Island or any, any of the Long Key, any of the islands and keys, wherever you are, it's a mammoth task. And the folks are trying. They're trying, but they need your help. All right, folks? All right? Please tell me you can do your duma. Please tell me, okay? So we can get the census done and done properly. We need your help. And we want you to cooperate and let's get this done, okay? All right, folks. Thank you much. Really appreciate it. All right. Okay, so someone asked me yesterday about the VAT issue regarding insurance. Okay. And the way they phrased the question was a kind of question that suggested that somehow some new tax may be coming on VAT or something of that nature. And I just wanted to see if I could clarify what the issue is with this VAT and the insurance industry. So let me tell you what has been happening. So when you pay your premium to the insurance company, there is a VAT charged on that premium. For the insurance company, that's what is called an input VAT, meaning it is a VAT that is charged on their input because you are the one who represents for them an inputted revenue stream, right? So the VAT is charged on that. And you are essentially their, you know, their customer. Now, that VAT isn't a cost to them, it's a cost to you, their customer, right? The consumer purchasing insurance services from them. For you to claim your VAT, yes, but it's true. They pay the claim to the medical or the health provider that you use. That health provider charges you a cost for your services, whether it's MRIs or just the visit itself to check up, whatever it is. And they attach to that pricing of yours a VAT. Okay, so they charge you $100, and then on top of that, they charge you 12% of $100 because there is a VAT attached to the service you got from that medical health practitioner. Well, when the insurance company pays your claim, the insurance company has been paying, in addition to your medical expense fee, the VAT. Okay? So they don't just pay the $100, they've been paying the $112. And so what the insurance company is saying to the government is, when it is time for me to net off what I receive in VAT from the premium payments, I should be able to net also what I paid in the VAT when I paid the claim for our client. And the government is saying, and the insurance company has been doing that. They've been doing that. And what the insurance, the government is saying is, that's not how we read the law, our business. That's not how it's supposed to work. So they have this issue of really how the VAT payment, how the insurance company's coverage of the VAT portion of your health expense on a claim should be treated. Is that, tell me you understand that before I go one more lick. If you need clarification of that, I want you to text me and I want you to tell me, no, I don't quite get it, and I'll try again. I'll try. So tell me that, please. Somebody text me if you've been listening. Let me know if you get it. So, you know, if you don't get it, then I'll try again. I'll try again. Let me see. I got a text here. It says, the way you explained it, it seems that the insurance companies have had major credits. Yeah, it would, because according to them, they have paid all the VAT attached to a medical expense that they have had to pay a claim for. And now they are saying, Well, because remember, a VAT is not a business tax. It's a consumer tax. So the company should not have had to pay that, for sure, because that's never been the intention of the VAT. It's always that the consumer bears the cost of that VAT. Only when the company, the business, is itself an end consumer, in some circumstances, it is not able to net off what it has been receiving, paying out in VAT. But in this instance, what they're saying is, listen, our customers file a claim of $112 that they were charged by their health professional. Consistent with our contract, we pay the claim, which includes the medical expense plus the VAT. And so we're wondering why it is that we can't net off that payment of the VAT against the receipts of VAT that we get, because we paid a VAT that isn't really our VAT. Okay? I think it's a legitimate question. I really do. Because if you go in a store and the food store buys an item that they may pay a VAT on, and you purchase that item from the food store on which they pay a VAT, the food store can recuperate its VAT. It can net that off against its VAT receipts. It can. Why, therefore, would an insurance company be different? So, I mean, this is just a question. I can understand why the government is wanting to have the matter looked at carefully and studied, but here's my initial thoughts on the matter. Let's say you're in the food store, you're a customer. You are in the insurance space, you're a customer. You are paying a VAT. You are paying a VAT that is received by your health professional and not the insurance company. The insurance company wants to net off against the receipts. I can see why the government says, but why should I allow you to net off what you have paid in VAT, what you paid in VAT, if in fact the payment you make or made is to the health professional who charged the VAT and therefore must himself or herself send the VAT that they charged into the government. This is really something. Right? Because whereas the food store paid out the VAT and received the VAT, in this instance, the insurance company, the health professional, the health provider, charged the customer its expenses plus VAT, gets a claim from the government, I mean, from the insurance company, receives that VAT receipt as well. They have a responsibility, the health professional, to give the government its VAT. But the insurance company is saying, but I paid that VAT. And therefore, I should be able to net off against you what I receive for you, the VAT. I can see why this is a huge, humongous issue. The government has a real point. I can see why the government said, let's study the matter. It's worth looking at carefully. I agree with that 100%. It is worth looking at really carefully. Real carefully. It's not so straightforward as one might think. Now, I could tell you how to solve this problem altogether, and somebody's typing me to say, listen, in the United Kingdom, in Europe, they don't charge VAT on
on insurance. They do not. At least the last set of information I got, they do not charge VAT on insurance. There are court cases on the matter. And the only thing the court case has surrounded in Europe is the question of defining what insurance services are to be defined as insurance, right? But I would have to say that the insurance providers, the industry is correct to say, if you are not going to permit me to net off this insurance, this VAT against the VAT I receive on the premiums, I will have to increase the premium to make a cost adjustment because I am now finding myself at a cost that I did not maybe factor into my pricing because I can't now recoup this VAT, right? I can see why they're saying that. Even as any additional cost to themselves, they need to recoup. But it's not as straightforward an issue as anyone might see. This person says, why not remove VAT from medical premiums and medical services? That's a shell game by the insurance companies. They should be happy they got away with that for this long. you're right. I mean, they clearly seem to have gotten away with something. I agree that on the face of it, right? Just looking at it, it does seem as if something odd is afoot. But again, I would welcome the study by the Insurance Commission to see what they conclude on the matter because it is an interesting. It's an interesting policy making can be really, really intriguing. Really intriguing. And this is one of those instances. It says, please go over it again. I did not get it. Okay. So let's see if we can try again. So when you pay your premium to your health insurance company, you are charged a 12% VAT on that. So that VAT that you pay, the insurance company can't keep. They're supposed to pay that back to the government. But the insurance company, when it makes expenses, also pays VAT. So what happens in the VAT system is, VAT you receive, you are able to take out VAT you pay out, and the difference you pay to the government. Okay? Well, one of the VATs that the insurance industry is saying their companies have been paying is the VAT that's paid from a health provider. And they're saying that that VAT that we paid, when we paid the claim to the health provider, we should be able to recoup against the premium, the VAT on the premiums we collect. The government is saying, no, we don't see it that way because the VAT that you are paying is charged by the health provider and that health provider is responsible for giving that VAT to the government net of its own VAT expenses. And so, but the insurance companies are saying, no, we're no different than the food stores, et cetera. Well, I just on the face of it, given my own look at it, I think the government has a point. But again, I'm prepared to listen and examine a thorough study and report on the issue because it doesn't and may not be as straightforward as even I think. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. Anyway. I hope that helps you understand at least what the issue is. This text says, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. I trust you are doing well. Oh, so that's something different. So we we'll have to see. We'll have to see how that goes. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the opposition's claim query about the yacht tax. When we come back, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabazz.
To think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami, no problem, just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
That's right, boys and girls. Get ready to play basketball at the 34th Annual Jeff Rogers Basketball Camp, July 4th through July 29th at the Kendall G.L. Isaacs Gym, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. daily. So parents, get your boys and girls ages 5 through 18 registered now. Applications available at the South Bahamas Conference of Seventh-day Adventists, Tonic Williams Darling Highway, and at the registration desk at Campsite Kendall G.L. Isaacs Gym. Special appearances by NBA players, legends, and coaches. So get your boys and girls registered now. Ages 34th Annual Jeff Rogers Basketball Camp, July 4th through July 29th.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabazz Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to call us, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. So Shadow Minister of Finance, Kwesi Thompson, the Member of Parliament for HIROC, for East Grand Bahama, yesterday demanded that the government explain, this is according to a article by Paige McCartney in the Nassau Guardian, demanded that the government explain why an amendment to tariffs on boats was not tabled, debated, and passed. First of all, let me say that is a legitimate question to ask why something wasn't done. Something like that. Very legitimate question. So Thompson was referring to a memorandum for the Ministry of Finance dated June 23rd and signed by the Financial Secretary Samuel Wilson instructing the Department of Customs to treat tariff head 8903, which deals with pleasure vessels, as duty-free until subsequent amendments to the Tariff Act are done during the next budget exercise. Says in a statement, Thompson said the memorandum raises a number of very serious and fundamental questions that demand an answer. What, and this is one of his questions, what exactly is the legal authority for the Ministry of Finance to adjust these tariffs outside of the parliamentary process? It is our understanding that only through Parliament can tariffs be changed, noted the statement. Okay, this here is a very interesting policy question. Notice what Mr. Thompson said. He didn't say that the legal authority for the Ministry of Finance to adjust tariffs let me read the question here. He says, what exactly is the legal authority for the Ministry of Finance to adjust these tariffs outside the process? So he didn't say outside of Parliament. He said outside of the parliamentary process. So the question is, what is that process? What is the legal authority for it? Well, let's look at, is it possible to adjust a tariff outside the parliamentary process? Well, let's look at the Protection of the Revenue Act. Let's look at it. Okay, remember, his question is outside of the parliamentary process. Listen to what it says, Chapter 294, Protection of the Revenue Act, Clause 3, Subsection 1. Listen to what it says. Whenever the Minister of Finance shall inform the Governor General that it is his intention to give notice to the House of Assembly that he proposes to introduce into that chamber a bill providing for variations of or amendments or additions to the imposts for any act, and the imposts imposed by any act, it means any duties, taxes, or fees levied under the Tariff Act, Stamp Act, or any other act, says that whenever that happens, it shall be lawful for the Governor General to provide by order for the period limited by this section and subject to the provisions of this act that the proposed variations, amendments, or additions to the imposts set out in the notice shall have statutory effect as if contained in an act as from the date of said notice. So, there is no authority outside of the parliamentary process if included in the parliamentary process of Mr. Thompson's inquiry is an order from the Governor General. So the first question is, in amending the tariff on pleasure vessels, where is the order from the Governor General? Remember, whenever the Minister for Finance shall inform the Governor General, that's where it starts, informing the Governor General that he will give notice to the House of Assembly that he proposes to introduce into the chamber a bill to make a variation. So what's the process? The Minister of Finance goes to the Governor General and he says, Governor General, I intend to give notice to change this tax. Introduce this tax. And when he does that, the Governor General gives him an order. Okay, so the Governor General drafts an order that says, okay, go ahead and do what you're doing, and this order will permit your change to come into effect as if you have already passed the law that you have given notice to Parliament of in order to change the tariff or the duty or the fee. So It is not lawful, it would seem, outside of an order from the Governor General, subsequent to a notice to the Governor General that this intention to change the tax is going to be given to the House of Assembly with a bill accompanying to amend that tariff. So if the query on Mr. Thompson's part is what's the legal authority, you need to have two things. Well, you need to have two things. One, an order from the Governor General, and two, a proposed bill for the amendment, and three, there's three, a notice to Parliament that you are going to be bringing this bill. Why does the law, this Protection of the Revenue Act, exist? The reason it exists is this: a bill in Parliament is a process. There's first reading, there's the introduction of the bill through first reading, there's the second reading of the bill and debate, then there is the third reading and committal of the bill, there is the process of the bill in committee being passed, and then there is the bill having been passed by the House, sent to the Senate for their process to be done. Then the bill having been passed by the Senate goes back to the House of Assembly, giving its consent to the House. And then the House, having this consent of the Senate for that bill, taking and sending the bill to the Governor General for his assent. That's a process that could take days. That could sometimes take weeks because of the debate and all kinds of other things. Yet the Minister of Finance wants to make a change to the law. If he gives that notice that he's gonna, if he submits that bill to the House, which then becomes public information, so that everyone gets to know, oh, duty on this is going up, duty on that is going up, and he waits for that law to be passed in order to give effect to that change, he will lose all kind of revenue. Why? Because people will say, well, you know, before the bill gets assented to by the Governor General, we better go ahead and purchase things at a cheaper price. And this ain't me and you, because me and you ain't gonna move that fast. Them businesses, man, they'll get lines of credit, they'll get cash, and they'll go buy all kind of stuff, an inventory for a long while to say, okay, but you ain't gotta worry about that for the next 12 months because we ain't paying that new high tax. So you just destroyed the whole in collecting more revenue from a new tax. So in order to prevent that, this provision in law was made so that the minister, on the day he makes that announcement that the revenue, that the tax has changed, it comes into effect right there, even though the law hasn't been passed, because he has an order from the Governor General, because he served notice to the Governor General that he was going to be doing this. It's called the Protection of the Revenue. But there's a process, right? There's a process. Now, so the question is one of, why was there an order to do this? Now, someone is pointing out that the leader of the opposition said, we cannot find any provision in the law to allow such a tariff adjustment to take place other than through parliamentary approval. And clearly, that is not the case. It can be done before the parliament approves it, but it has to be done by the parliament ultimately. Okay, so if you don't have the parliament do it, that will fall away. It will not be law. Okay, so that you can't escape the parliamentary procedure. So Mr. Pindad is not incorrect It's not incorrect to say that outside the parliamentary procedure. Of course, it can be done before a parliamentary vote. But why provide for the need for a law if you don't need the law to begin with, because you can just announce the change in the tax? Not possible. So Mr. Pindot isn't wrong to say that they can't find any authority in law outside of parliament, because you have to have the parliament to give effect to your announcement. Ultimately, if you don't do it, if you don't do it in time, it falls away. What does the law say? The bill embodying such variations, amendments, or additions is not passed without amendment by the Senate under, or these are the provisions that has happened. So you see, the Protection of the Revenue Act says that the act has from the date of the said notice, the order shall cease to have statutory effect. Listen to it, cease to have statutory effect. If the House of Assembly is dissolved or prorogued, the provisions of a bill giving effect to such variations, amendments, or additions are rejected during the passage of such bill in the House of Assembly, provided that instead you could do it by resolution, says that an act comes into operation varying, amending, or adding to the duties of customs. The bill embodying the variations, amendments, or additions is not passed without amendment by the Senate under the provisions of Article 61 of the Constitution. All right? So it does require Parliament. There's no question about that. But it does not require Parliament to introduce the change. We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you. Hi, go ahead, caller, we're listening to you. Okay. We don't hear from that caller. We're going to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails, and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
Hello, Keisha, you something else, boy.
Who this is? Tamika?
You ain't even remember my name? Wow, Dred.
Girl, I've been so busy. You still planning your trip?
Girl, and I can't wait. I right here online booking my car.
You dare planning trip. You vaccinated?
Girl, we had to. We ain't been nowhere since this pandemic started. Girl, and we got a 14-day vacation.
Best vacation ever.
Girl, are you though?
Well, I know you's gonna get the vaccine because you too like travel. When y'all get your vaccine?
Girl, long time. Because you got to get your first dose, wait, then get your second dose at least 2 weeks before you travel. Johnny get his vaccine, even Grammy get hers. Child, and Grammy say she ain't get no money. But I say, I not under the mattress.
Child, let me send my list, because I know you going shopping.
Keisha, don't play with me.
Vaccinate today, live tomorrow. A message by PAHO, WHO, Canada, and USAID.
Imagine driving your dream car, doing all the things you never thought you could, like perfecting your parallel parking skills or picking up your date. Everyone loves to dream. Stop dreaming. Start driving with a brand new offer from Scotiabank. With an auto loan from Scotiabank, benefit from no payments for up to 2 months, a low interest rate up to 9 years to repay, and free insurance for the first year up to 2.5% of the loan amount. Promotion ends June 30th, 2022. Stop dreaming and start driving today with an auto loan from Scotiabank.
I'm not afraid to take a stand,
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, on this beautiful, wonderful. So glad you could join us. You can call us on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. The change in the tax for pleasure vessels remains an interesting one for sure. I do note that the letter sent by the financial secretary to the customs controller was dated June 23rd. Wasn't the debate on the budget still taking place? Huh? Wasn't the debate on the budget hadn't been passed yet quite, right? So there was still occasion and opportunity to include that change in the provisions of the bills in Parliament. So maybe it was an oversight, for sure. This is not a situation in which there is some scandal afoot, unless somebody could demonstrate that there was some kind of special interest advocacy that made this possible. Clearly, reducing the tax on the pleasure vessels gives us a more competitive edge in an area where we want that competitive edge and want to be able to attract more vessels and therefore more economic activity to the country, because these people will come and spend on restaurant, food stores, fuel, all kinds of things. So as a matter of course, why wouldn't you want to be more competitive? Now, somebody says you put the VAT up on food, you drop it on pleasure vessels. That's not a fair comparison to me. I'm sorry, you can't get me to buy into that kind of argument. That don't make no sense. Because if you do a thing to bring you more economic activity, you're doing it to bring more income into the country that will assist the people who need the income. Right? Now, putting the VAT up on the exempted items on food, well, we did not the argument about that. But comparing the two is not, to me, a comparison of apples and apples. They are two different things. It was passed in the House of Assembly on June 16th, passed in the Senate on June 23rd. All right. Okay. So maybe somebody just missed it then. On the day the Senate passed it, you like figure, ooh, we should reduce the thing. Okay. Maybe it was an oversight. But again, it's not a scandalous oversight situation to me. Actually, the opposition is asking a question of procedure. I didn't hear anything protesting the change, as in it being bad for the country. I didn't hear anything along those lines. So, we have some text here. Says, could citizens complete the census online? I don't think so yet, but that's a good question. I'm happy to try and get an answer for you. I'm so happy you asked the question, though. That means you were listening. Please try and get it done. Thank you. I'll find out for you. This text says, the way you explained it, it seems that the insurance companies have had major credit. Oh, I read that before from the government. So this says VAT is now 10%, not 12%. Yes, VAT is 10%. That's right. VAT is 10%. 10%, not 12%. That's right. So what do you mean by net off? Net off means the VAT that the company we takes in, that when they total all of that, they subtract the VAT that they spend away from it. So if the company collects $1,000 in VAT and they pay $500 in VAT, they net off by subtracting $500 from $1,000 so that they give the government $500. That's what I mean by net off. Good question. Because I can see the conflicting sides. The government wants all of the VAT and insurance companies want to pay a portion of the VAT in order to net it off against its VAT inputs. Removing this advantage for the insurance company will consequently result in significantly higher health insurance premium and an added burden on the aims. The government must acknowledge this and try to make life easier for its citizenry. Okie dokie. Okie dokie. So this text says, they said, that the PLP is giving tax breaks to the wealthy while putting taxes on breadbasket items for the poorest Bahamians. All right. I mean, okay, if that's the argument that the opposition is making, I don't think that that's a strong argument if the issue is reducing the tax on yachts, because, I mean, this isn't a situation in which you're giving pleasure vessels a tax decrease simply for their own sake and not benefiting from it. That's why you have been trying to attract these yachts and build up a yacht registry, because there's monies to be had from it. That's for sure, right? Now, unless somebody tells me someone did this because they got a client who is a high-paying yacht person and they did this for them, and you could show me some narrower self-interest involved, it is kind of curious that it would be an oversight like this during a budget process, but things happen, you know, things happen. This says, yes, but they are still having issues and some people have to be still interviewed in person. Census. All right, we take that up. We take that up when we come back from the news break. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shavago Lang, your host. We're going to take a break from news, and then when we come back, we will continue our discussions. We'll be back after the news break.
Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody,
come take my hand.
We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you.
Welcome back, ladies. Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call at all, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. So we had a text here about the census. Is the answer yes, you can do the census by online? Is that what the person is saying? But they are still having issues and some people have to be still interviewed in person. Text says a pre-poll house visit occurred to collect contact info for homes and those individuals who afforded opportunity to fill out online. Okay, a tracking number was added to homes so it wouldn't be duplicated. Okay. So this says if you didn't provide info during the census pre-visit, you won't be able to fill out online, okay? So it seems there is a process for online, but only for people who had kind of qualified to do so during the pre-census exercise, okay? In any event, just stay alert for the census folk and cooperate with you. I did it. Sat down and I think it took me 15 minutes at maximum, maybe 20 minutes. Well, everybody doesn't have to be there. You know, an adult person capable of answering the questions of the household. No, normally you want to head household or to do it, but you know, but somebody who's capable can answer the questions about the people who live in the household and some basic demographic information and, you know, stuff like that. And this is important. And so, so take some time and do it, please. Okay? This is part of nationhood, right? Part of your belongingness to the country. There's some things we do because our civic responsibility compels us to do it. You remember in the Bible how Jesus them had to go, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph had to go with Jesus to go take part in the census? Yeah, you need to know what your human resource strength is, what your human resource profile is, what your human resource nuances are, so that you can know what's happening in your nation and what you might be up against when things happen or what you might be able to do when you need to respond to things. And you can only know that by having the required information. So help them. It's your duty. Let's do our duty and cooperate with those census people. Put the dog away. Put the dog away. You hear somebody at the gate knocking at the door. Go look and see. And I'm talking to everybody, some of y'all who live behind the gate, who live behind these fancy neighbors, which God bless you that you can do so, may not be. Some of y'all who have nice, big, fancy homes on the hill. Everybody, we need you. Lawyer, doctor, electrician, plumber, banker, insurance professional, insurance agent, all you know. Gas station attendant, business owner, board of director, director on the board. We need all of you to help the census people out, okay? They're out there and they're working hard, but they need some help. They need your help. So I was looking in the newspaper and I noticed that the PM on returning to the country was asked about the actuary report on national insurance's rate increase proposed by the report. And the PM indicated that he had not yet read the report or reviewed it and read it. And he said that the government had made no determination on whether to follow the recommendation for a rate increase to save the fund from depleting in 6 years. He said that, in quote, the recommendation has been made. It doesn't come off the table until we decide whether or not to accept the recommendation. We have not yet done that, as I indicated. Other fiscal issues, i.e. how the economy is going to be growing, where we are going to be obtaining new revenues, how effective our collection efforts to determine how we address that. And if we can find ways and means to alleviate the burden on the poor Bahamians or Bahamian worker, we will do so. That's what the PM said on June 27th, when he returned. Now, the PM may find himself in a bit of a quandary, because on April 14th, according to a Tribune report, Prime Minister Philip Braid Davis said yesterday, remember Miles LaRota, the minister responsible for NIB in the Prime Minister's office, indicated that this report recommended the need for a rate increase, and Mr. LaRota suggested that one was coming. And that started a big hullabaloo. And then the Prime Minister weighed in on the issue. And according to the Tribune, Thursday, April 14th, Prime Minister Philip Braid Davis said yesterday there will be no increase in National Insurance Board contributions until his administration is able to arrest the hardships facing Bahamians. Now, if you read the two statements, there is a place at which they converge, and then they're not out of sync, but they suggest that the PM those have made a determination that there's not going to be any increase in the contribution rate until Bahamians no longer face hardships. What is the definition of no longer face hardships? What does that mean? Does that mean when the unemployment rate gets to a certain point, when wages get to a certain point, when the economy is growing at a certain point, what combinations of things will define the absence or rest of hardships for Bahamians? When the pandemic is over, which will it be? We don't know, but he indicated that the trigger for any consideration of any contribution rate increase is going to be end of hardships for Bahamians, or an arrest of it. Now, that's a determination, but yet in later, the Prime Minister is saying in the Guardian that no decision has been made by his administration on the matter. Okay? That no determination has been made on the matter. This is what we call policy incongruency. Or there could be some misreading, some misunderstanding, some misinterpretation, some confusion on the matter. On the one hand, an actuary says this is a matter of great urgency. The minister says it's a matter of urgency, at least the minister of state. The minister with portfolio responsible for NID is the prime minister. Let's be clear. All right? Miles LaRota, the honorable, is not his junior minister. He is his deputy of a sort. He is the minister of state responsible for NID. The prime minister is the portfolio minister responsible for NID. And the portfolio minister is saying, we're not going to do anything about this until the hardship facing Bahamians are arrested. When you hear words like that, as a matter of policy inquiry, you're looking for a trigger. What is a trigger? You're looking for that thing, that metric that defines arrest of hardship. That's what you're looking for. If you don't want to operate in platitudes, if you don't want to operate in the vague, if you don't want to operate in the nebulous, you want to find out, okay, when will I know that Bahamians aren't facing hardship? And what does that mean? Because can you conceive of a period of time in which some Bahamians are not facing hardships in the country? Can you? The poor ye shall have with you always. Can you conceive of a period of time when there's something? So what does it mean? How many Bahamians have to not be facing hardship in order for this to have been arrested? And how will we know what metrics are used to determine that that hardship has been arrested? What is the definition of hardship in this circumstance? Is it cost of living? Is it inflation? Is it the growth rate of the economy or some combination thereof? Is it stagnancy in wages? What are the metrics we will use to measure this? Now, I'll tell you, in the Government and Public Policy Institute's Recovery and Sustainable Growth Study, we determine that, because the government did ask the question, what would it take to reverse the economic and fiscal challenges the country was facing? And what we determined was that a number of metrics would be used to track when those challenges would be reversed. And what were the metrics that we were measuring? We were measuring unemployment. We were measuring the current account of the country. We were measuring the growth rate of the economy. We were measuring movements in five sectors of the economy, including tourism, financial service, the transformation sector, the trade sector, the financial services sector, and then what we collectively call other sectors. So we were looking at the fiscal surplus / deficit. We were looking at the debt to GDP ratio. And we were looking at inequality and poverty rates. We were looking at inflation. So we had about seven or so metrics that we looked at to see when they started trending in a positive direction, what that would mean to the health of the economy. Okay? So that would be what would have to happen for us to, for the government to be able to say, you know what? The Bahamian people, whatever number that is, whatever number percentage that is, whatever, the Bahamian people are no longer facing hardship because we now see unemployment at this level. We now see the deficit at this level. We now see growth at this level and so forth and so forth. And that combination tells us we can now look at doing something about the contribution rate. Well, let me ask you all. The report says this needs next month, July 1. That's what the report says. Do you think that Bahamian's hardship is going to be arrested on July 1? How about January 1, 2023? How about December 31st, 2023? How about January 1, 2024? Do you believe Bahamians and their economic and financial hardships will be arrested by the end of 2024? No, not by any metric you and I could measure we might be better off, but arrested, well, that's debatable. It could, you know, debatable. I'm not saying, but debatable. But in any event, 12 months from now is 12 months from when the report said you have to stop. 24 months from now is 24 months from when the report says you have to stop. So the challenge then becomes more acute in those circumstances. So I think that the prime minister, you know, those have a dilemma and we'll have to deal with it. I honestly don't think any decision is going to be made anytime soon, but we shall see. Ladies and gentlemen, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussions. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
The car. The lady run into me, marsh the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull out the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today, or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
I used to think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami, no problem. Just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, you can call us on 323-623-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. This text says, good day, sir. It is my belief that the PM, Minister of National Security, Minister of Health are completely lost and out of touch. Well, I don't know. I don't hear much from the Minister of National Security and the Minister of Health. But I can tell you, I don't think the Prime Minister is out of touch. I think the Prime Minister has a great deal of connectedness to the things many of Bahamians feel is deeply about, and his speaks to that, you know? So I don't know about being out of touch. Listen to me, it's hard for you to say the prime minister is out of touch when the prime minister is saying, I don't want to increase contribution rates for Bahamians. Right? How many Bahamians want the contribution rate to go up? Not many. Shivago Lang may not even want it to go up. He just knows it has to go up. right? But the, if you are one of those political leaders saying don't increase taxes, don't increase the rate, you are very much in touch with the Bayesian society, very much in touch, right? So I'm sorry, I think the prime minister is very much in touch. Now, whether what he seeks to do for you is what is best for the country, that's a huge question. Is it better for you that the bomb, the contribution rate not go up? And if that's better for you, is that better for the country? You might say, well, I am the country. Okay, when national insurance goes broke, is the country better off or worse off because of it? That's the question. So this text says, how about never? You mean as in when the contribution rate will go up or what? I miss what that relates to. This text says, our prime minister seeks to be pleaser in chief. He will soon find out how hard that will be. Now, there's a person who understands what is at stake, right? Because the reality is that these are choices, right? Let me tell you all something. And you ought to get mad with me if you want. I really don't care. I can't care about it because it's the truth, right? A politician not wanting to do something that makes you angry because it costs you money immediately and having to put that against the need to do something that costs you money that is good for the country, the politician with that dilemma is mostly in that dilemma because of you. Because of you. Why do I say that? Well, if you were prepared to give enough time and consideration to the issue to be able to say, you know what? Yeah, I don't want nobody to tax me no more. I don't want nobody to charge me no more money, but this institution provides a overall benefit to the country. So I'm prepared to suck up the increase because of the necessity of that. And I'm going to tell my politicians so. And I'm telling my politicians, I don't care how much you want to keep me happy in that direct way. Don't keep me happy. Do make the country happy by keeping this institution viable and sustainable. Then the politician doesn't have that pressure on him. But he knows you. He knows you. He knows that you will be pissed off with him for raising your contribution rates and causing you to have to pay more out of your paycheck. He knows you can be angry at him, and all he has in his head is, when I go to ask for a vote, they are going to remember I raised the VAT, I raised the contribution rate, I raised this, I raised that, and boom, I can get voted out. So it isn't odd that politicians strain at making sensible policy decisions when they know those policy decisions are going to be a cost to you that you do not want to bear. Not only do you not want to bear it, you will punish those who cause you to bear it. They know that. They absolutely know that. Hubert Ingraham knew that when he faced the road project. He knew that this could be very disruptive and people would be angry and you're going to suffer popularity because of it. He knew it. Did it anyhow. But he knew it. And so our society is the problem to the extent that largely, whether they calculate rightly or wrongly, politicians at the end of the day understand this. I've told you all this before. If you get to understand it, you will know what the, and you all know, you all probably know already what the puppet strings of a politician are. What's the puppet strings of popularity? What's the currency of politics? Popularity. Why? Because popularity gets votes. The more unpopular you are, the less votes you get. The more popular you are, the more votes you get. The more popular you are, the more votes you get. The more unpopular you are, the less votes you get. The more popular you are, the richer you are as a politician. The more unpopular you are, the poorer you are as a politician. So the politician works for the wealth and currency of popularity. Now, national development, nation building, national progress doesn't always work for the popular things. If you are a parent, you already know how this works. If you are a guardian, you already know how this works. If you are the leader of an organization, you already know how this works. Many days you have to do things that, or not do things that are going to mean people will not be happy with you. Husbands can be pissed off with their wives, wives with their husbands, children with their parents, parents with their children, managers with their staff, employers with their employees. Why? You have to make choices that some people are not going to like, but it's best. You think, you know what my son told me? My 13-year-old son told me. We were watching something and it said, the documentary said, people don't like to go to school. He said, finally, somebody who gets me. He don't like school. I understand that. I mean, let's be real though. Like, children like the friends in school. Children don't like school, generally speaking. I didn't like school. We liked being at school sometimes, but the book work and that. But despite all that, you make them go and require them to go to class and require them to do the homework and require them to do the studying. Why? It's good for them, no matter how unpopular it is. You try to get them to eat vegetables, no matter how unpopular it is. I don't like vegetables, generally speaking, man. But you eat it because it's good for you. And similarly, in a country, you got to make decisions, man, like raise the contribution rate, right? Like contain expenses. You know what I mean? You got to raise taxes sometimes, right? You prosecute people. Enforce the law. It isn't popular, but it's necessary for orderly national development. And, you know, if you are on board, it's easier for the politician. If you are not on board, he or she's struggling, Jack. I can tell you, they are sweating blood thinking about how unpopular. And you know what they do in the mean? What many, many do, they avoid the hard things. They avoid it like the plague. And so what happens is they pander to you. Oh, yes, I agree with you. We don't need to put any more burdens on the people, the poor people. We don't need to do that. We don't need to boo, doo, doo, boo, 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 bow, wow, all of that. Out of office. When you get in office, you still try to pander while the realities of things are confronting you. And you put off as much as you can for as long as you can until what they say, the stuff hit the ceiling. Right? It's on you. And you can tell them, Shivago Lang told you, it's on you, the population, you the voters, the popularity holders. Just, if you were more pop, listen, let me ask you all a question. Let's suppose, I'm just saying, let's suppose they took a survey and the survey said 90% of people in the country believe there should be an increase in the contribution rate. You think that'll be hard for the politicians to do? Let me tell you all when what you all think is popular, don't be popular with Bahamians. Let me tell you when that happened with politicians. Let me tell you when they find it hard to do what is popular to you. When they have a financial backer, it's the only time, or a ally that is against that thing you think is popular, that's when politicians are not going to follow you in your popularity. You want an example of that? The gambling referendum. You said, no, we don't want you to go legalize gambling. You said that in a referendum. What did the government do? The government did the opposite. Why? Other interests was not with that. Let's stop fooling ourselves. I'm not even blaming the interests. I'm not saying those interests were dark and evil and all that kind of. Not at all. Not at all. They have a right to fight for their interests. If you're a business person, you have a right to fight for your interests. But let's be clear. Other than when a vested interest on the part of the politician, which is normally a backer, a financial backer, or a political ally, normally, when they are not against something, when they are not going to be hurt by something that the population thinks is popular, the government finds it easy to move with that thing. Easy. So if you want the government to listen to you more with things, you got to show there's popularity for it. And I'm talking about things that matter and things that may be difficult and things they might not want to do simply because they think you are going to be against it. So this text says, you said, when could the rates go up? I said, never. Okay. Never. It can go up. Trust me. The contribution rate's going up. You don't have to worry about that. They are going to go up. This text says, we need to cut out the pension to you politicians because it is you who choose to serve. We paid you while you serve. Why should we continue to take care of you? First of all, you have no knowledge of parliamentary pensions work. So let me give you an education since you didn't educate yourself. Parliament politicians pay pension contributions. So yes, you pay them, and it is deducted from the pay is their contribution toward their pension. So they are unlike your civil servants. Your civil servants pay no contribution toward their pension, and I'm not blaming them, bless the Lord, thank you, Jesus, for them. But you, sir or ma'am, are dead wrong, because politicians have what is called a contributory pension. They pay into their pension. Their pension is paid from monies they saved. Thank Jesus for knowledge. Because I'm tired of stupid stuff being said that are only intended to try to bring down politicians who serve. Okay? Absolute nonsense. Politicians pay contribution to their pension, unlike any other government officer in the civil service. So I don't want to hear that nonsense no more. No more. And if you are a gracious soul, text back, because I don't know your name, and say, sorry, I didn't know. This text says, we are not mad with you. We just disagree with you. Who politician has the right, just because he's elected, to determine what is in our best interest? Well, so again, I'm so glad you're raising this, because see, oh my God, we have so much work to do. What, my friend, when you elected them people, you gave them that right, or didn't you know? Oh my God, what kind of civic education exists in our country? Oh my goodness, did you hear? Let me read it for you again. Let me tell you what your constitution says. That there shall be a cabinet, and it shall have the
that it shall have responsibility for the general direction and control of the government. Do you know what direction is? Direction is determination of best interest. So just in case you didn't know, I just helped you, I hope. So it's the politicians for the most part that have this country in the mess that it is in today. We didn't run NIB in the ground. The government sets the contribution tax rate for NIB and we are mandated to pay. We have no choice. I'm not blaming you, bro. I'm not blaming you. I'm not blaming you for any miscalculation, mismanagement, misadministration. I'm not blaming you, but you can't have your cake and eat it too. You cannot go abroad and brag about what kind of orderly country you have. You can't go and brag about what kind of great country you have. You can't live in this country and have the peace you have because of the constabulary it has. You can't live in the country and enjoy the third highest per capita income in the Americas and still turn around and say it's the politicians that have the country messed up like it is. You can't do that. You can't have your cake and eat it too, bro. You can't blame the woman for having a child that has two eyes and two hands and is wonderfully this, and then at the same time say, well, the same who unfortunately may have a birthmark somewhere you don't like, you can't, the same woman had the child. Okay, same woman had the child. So nobody's blaming you for anything, so get off your defensive stand. What we say, what we know is politicians in the Bahamas are messed up. Yes, they have, but they've also done some great things for the country. The same NIB that you're talking about is messed up was created by politicians to create a benefit for the country. Did they not do that? All right, come on, man. You can't have your cake and eat it too. Right? Goes both ways. The text says a politician is elected to serve the people, and if they can't do what the people in the majority want, then stay out of politics. Okay, we're gonna take a break now, our final break, and then when we come back, let's take the caller before we go. Let's take the caller. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you. Hi, go ahead, caller. Okay, I think we lost him. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back after this break.
When faced with an illness like cancer, we band together, and we at Cleveland Clinic in Florida have your back. From advanced cancer treatments to extra safety measures at all of our locations, we're with you on this journey. For every infusion and follow-up, for every step in the world, Cleveland Clinic in Florida. Get the care you need when and where you need it. To learn more or connect with a local representative, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids in school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails, and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
Gentlemen, to see live. I'm Shabar Ulaid, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If in the remaining moments of the show you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us at 422-4796 or WhatsApp me at 439-3043. This text says, likewise, if 90% of the people say no to an increase in contribution rate, then the politicians should comply or else their days will be numbered. Christie learned that the hard way when he disregarded the voice of the people as it related to the gaming referendum. Yeah. I don't want me to be your prime minister, because if 90% of y'all say that you don't want the contribution rate in NIB to go up, and I know sensibly that the rate should go up so as to protect the fund, you could fire me next election. You could be sure of that. You could be dead sure of that. Because while you aren't elected simply to do what the majority says, right? You're not. You may think so, but you're not. Because you are elected to protect minority people in your country as well. Because there are people who are in the minority in your country. Let me give you an example. You have a law in the Bahamas that talks about the protection of the rights of people, the freedom of religion. The majority of people in this, there's a minority of people in this country who are not Christian, who are not of the Judeo-Christian persuasion. If their rights are being affected, if their rights are being affected, you can do the necessary to protect their rights. They're a minority. But that's what your job, that's what governance is. So governance isn't just simply doing what the majority said. And what I'm indicating is if something is popular, you can use that something to advocate for something. And that makes sense, okay? But you can vote whoever in or out you wish. That's your right. But I can tell you one thing, a sensible leader isn't gonna simply do something because lots of people wanted it. That had prevailed in the world. There was a time when most people in the United States were white, and they still are in a marginal way. And they believed in the majority that Black people were not fully human. Right up and contest that popular view. Slavery may still be around. This text says, Lang NIB contribution has gone up. We received our notice from HR today. That's not true. That's not true. But you could send me the letter, though. Send me the letter. Let me read the letter, and then I'll believe you once I'll read the letter and see what the letter says. The contribution rate has not gone up. Not the rate, right? But maybe send me the letter. This text says, Mr. Lang, the PM has to make a hard decision. Can I continue to kick the can down the road, re-NIB, or we all suffer? That's the issue. That's how it works. You gotta sometimes make some decisions. And why is it hard? It's only hard because it's unpopular. It's not hard because implementing it is hard. It's hard because it's unpopular. Because think about it, right? If the government made a decision today to increase NIB's contribution rate by 2%, all that happens is the necessary regulatory framework is put in place to make that happen. That's not hard. And bam, it kicks in on a certain date. Then the employers start making that deduction or payment on the basis of that. Where it gets hard is when people start complaining and saying to the politician, you can get yours for doing this. That's when it gets hard. This text says, great show as usual. Some people still think and treat Black people as if they're maybe so, but slavery is not legal. So things have changed. Things have changed. So that's not the same thing. Yeah. So we'll see what happens in respect of these two matters that we looked at, the insurance, the VAT. Treatment of insurance for the VAT treatment for insurance companies and the NIB contribution rate. Again, I want to remind all of you that there is the census going on. And the census people do need your support. And so please take the time out to ensure that when they come to you,
that you are giving them the help and support they require. This text says, do you Eugenicists still think we come simians? You read the writing of it is a little more complicated than I feel it right now. I think that when you look at the multitude of issues confronting the Bahamas, the very hard issues confronting the Bahamas, and what are those hard issues? Hard issues like what to do about the fiscal situation, the deficit, the increasing debt. What to do about NIB and that kind of stuff. Really, a lot of this is going to, how these are addressed, are going to boil down to how the prime minister approaches the job from the point of view of popular response to the issues. Whether in the end he thinks that it's better to bring people along, have people be popularly in support of something, or whether he thinks, well, you know, you want to try and bring people along, but at the end of the day, it is also necessary to make decisions. Make decisions that you don't popularly support. If you can give a proper rationality, and so we shall have to see. My own impression is that right for the time being, the prime minister's posture is that, you know, things are tough for Bahamians, and that it's better to try and ease up on them as much as possible. And then when the circumstances get better, then you can begin to do some things. Well, the only question about that is whether or not that posture is sustainable in light of some of the more urgent issues confronting the country, and we'll find out soon enough. It's Texas, Mr. Lang, NIB is the safety net of our country. So LaRota and the PM are not singing from the same hymn book. It is what it is. Do what has to be done. And while they are at it, fix Sir Clifford Darling's name properly on NIB headquarters. It is damaged and looks disgraceful. Okay. Well, maybe they heard you, and maybe they will they'll give attention to that, as you say. We have another text here. Text says, based on your personality from a public view, you consider you could never be prime minister. A special people and leadership skill are required to be a successful politician / prime minister. And it's okay that you don't possess them. I don't either. Okay. There you go. I shall never be prime minister, according to you. No problem. I tell you one thing. I'm not going to be inauthentic. I'm not going to fake with you. I'm not going to pretend to be something I'm not. So we'll see. Since your crystal ball is very clear, we'll see. Thank God somebody has gotten a job. And it's their task to do it. That way I can just speak as freely as I want today. All right? We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Yes, sir. Good evening, sir.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Yes. You know, Mr. Lang, you know, in the UK, they got a rate increase in their NIC contribution,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, and their NIC takes care of us, healthcare, right? It also takes care of social services, you know, and then there's the pension, and no matter who, in a pension, everybody gets the same, right? But if you're not a contributor, you don't get anything.
Right.
You know? But when you become old, you know, as well as the social assistance you get from them, you know, as well as you know, you get housing for the old and things that old people get.
Right.
You know, so as well as these people, they pay income tax. You know, they pay many sorts of other taxes.
But they also get a lot of provisions in their pension and social assistance that we don't get as well.
Right, as well as they get a tax from the private, from employment tax. I mean, private insurance tax, a mandated one.
Right, but they got health insurance for free health insurance for life.
Right.
All right.
You know, they get pension from the private and from the employers. Once you employ more than two people, you have to pay.
All right.
Much as two people, you have to pay.
Right.
You know. So we have to get rid of it in this Bahamas and stop crying about taxes and the like. We need to get rid of our government. We need to do our jobs, you know. And all these people, these small business owners, they need to be regulated and pay taxes and, you know, for these employees, take care of the employers, you know, and the
Thank
like.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you calling me. We're plowing out of time. Says good afternoon, Mr. Lang. NIB needs to be increased, but when you are campaigning and make certain promises that when faced with the reality, you cannot keep them because their interest is to be reelected, this is bad. That's why we cannot get anywhere. All right, ladies and gentlemen, listen, thank you so very much. Great evening. You've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. Have a great evening.